Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Monday morning. Monday, March the 23rd, 2026. First Monday in spring. How about that? 14 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to WGH Talk Radio. And this hour, we're always glad to be joined by the guest we have in the studio. Now, big story last week. Got a lot of play on social media and in the newspaper. Basically, the story is this. Marion City Schools plan to cut 66 staff positions, part of an 81-person reduction over 2 years to address its spending deficit. That was the story that got people up in arms, and this morning we are joined by Marion City Schools Superintendent Brian Murphy. Brian, thanks so much for coming in after the big story last week.
Good morning, Scott. It's good to be back with you. It's been a few months.
It's always good to be with you. Let's just start off the top. We'll take it broad here. That's the story as it was written. What's going on?
Yeah, so a lot of people know recently there were some budget bills that went through the state that were passed that, you know, was a tremendous impact negatively in terms of the budget for school districts across the state. So ultimately, it's the big conversation is around property tax, right? And so what you'll see right now, and this is just part of it, but what you'll see across the state is, and I just, you know, just read something yesterday that included a lot of the urban districts, whether it's Toledo, Columbus, whether Elyria. There's a lot of school districts right now that are cutting not just a little bit, but they're cutting significantly. And mostly, for the most part, the five-year forecast has changed for school districts. That trend right now is for school districts that are heavily state-funded. So Marion City Schools, we're 77-78%, you know, funded by the state. You know, local property tax does not fund as much as a lot of your other districts around, you know, even Central Ohio, you know, whether you're talking about Olentangy, Delaware, whatever it may be. So the trend is these districts that are heavily state funded are getting hit. Now, I'll also say that's a piece of it. I knew coming in as superintendent when I looked at the five-year forecast that we were going to have to begin making tweaks. Last year, we quietly made 15 reductions. And then this year 66, so it gets us to 81. So, you know, decline in enrollment over the years in Marion City Schools, I think my guess is, and we don't have data to go back this far, but it's probably a 20-year trend in enrollment loss. You have the Ed Choice voucher for private schools. You have the charter schools now that are expanding everywhere throughout the state. We're impacted locally here at Marion. But so when you combine all of that, it's created a spending deficit, which was in place before I got here. So I knew we were going to have to take corrective action. I knew what we were carrying. You know, we were carrying a lot of staff for a district our size. I think the district over the years had just kept adding positions, and there hasn't been a lot of reductions, if any reductions in 10 years. So when these new budget bills came out, it just added to the problem, you know. So I think probably over the next 3 or 4 years, you know, we're projected to lose another between 3 and 4 million, which just, you know, exacerbates the situation and makes us go deeper in the cuts.
How can something like this happen, I think, is people's reaction. How can we get to this point?
You know, I hate to say this, but it all comes around. You know, I think back to 2010, 2011, we went through the same thing. A lot of districts in the state of Ohio went through the same process. You know, for whatever reason, that's the cycle. You know, I remember Toledo, it cut $40 million at that time, and we cut a lot of positions as well. And it's the evolving flow in the politics connected to education, whether it's the state of Ohio or any other state as well. So, you know, I think it's, this time around, it started at the federal level. You know, everybody talked about DOGE. We have to right-size these public entities, including public education. So Ohio, you know, Ohio is a very Republican state at this point in time, and I think that DOGE effect was real, and it streamed down into, you know, public schools and the public sector and holistically. And that's why these budget bills came out. And that's why we're partially really dealing with the situation in some sense.
Now, the idea behind DOGE was, I think, at that time, it's fat that we need to get rid of. The government's got a lot of fat. We can cut this stuff and there will hardly be any change because this wasn't needed to begin with. What do you say to that assertion that we can cut this money out of the schools, there's going to be no change, won't hurt anybody, it was just fat?
You know, every district's a little bit different. I mean, and we know that districts like, say, for example, and I'm just saying this because they're the closest to us, Olentangy, they're a more affluent district. They rely heavily on property taxes, and as property taxes go up, they get more and more money to fund their schools. You have more stability in a school district. You have, anytime you have higher socioeconomic status, you have family structures, less issues in the community, that type of thing. You know, districts such as Marion City Schools, you know, such as, you know, some of the schools that are heavily state funded, we typically, because we're heavily state funded, we have a lot, we need a lot of supports, not just to support kids, but to support families in our community to really make it a level playing field, right? So I think, you know, up to this point, the state, for the most part, had done a pretty good job ensuring that districts like Marion City Schools were getting the financial resources that it's need. Here we are today, we got to, you know, cut back and adjust. So I do believe that we were carrying a lot of extra positions in the district because based on the size that we are, I saw that right away as superintendent. But at the same time, I can't sit here and say we don't need them. You know, I would take as many supports and resources to support kids and families as possible. So will it hurt a little bit? Absolutely. It certainly. I mean, the more support that we can provide kids and families, you know, the better. So these reductions will hurt a little bit. But I truly believe, and I mean this, you know, when you compare the supports that we have for our kids and families in the community to most districts across the state of Ohio, even very much school districts like Marion City Schools, same socioeconomic status, I believe even after the reductions, we still have more supports than most districts that are comparable to us.
Now, do you think a lot of people will hear that comment and say, well, they didn't need that money to begin with. They didn't need these positions to begin with. They're going to get along just fine.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be that. And you know, as superintendent, and I know our board, I can't speak for our board, but I know that we all need to be fiscally responsible to our taxpayers. That's our responsibility. Our responsibility is to provide the best education as possible to these kids, to get them ready, to be college and career ready. That's our responsibility. At the same time, we have to do it in a way that we're fiscally responsible because these are tax dollars that are that the community is giving to educate their students. So I'm sure they will. At the same time, I think that, you know, historically, go back to the last 10, 15 years when the district was adding positions, it was with good intent. They were adding positions based on looking at the budget. Yes, we could use more support in a classroom. We could have more literacy support teachers in a classroom, more coaches in a classroom, more aides in a classroom. The more support you have like that, the better opportunity, you know, you have for a child to be successful. So, yes, I could see him doing that. Do I think we could be through, you know, our leadership teams, you know, leadership and our philosophy around building a strong culture and, you know, good systems operations things. Do I think we could be just as successful without those supports? I do. I truly do. But I think we have a very strong leadership team right now.
You know, everybody's got to be optimistic about where they work and what they do. But sometimes I know a lot of citizens get the feeling, much like with the city, not to get into what's going on with the city, but when the mayor gets up and says, we now have a balanced budget for the first time in several years, and we didn't have to lay off a single employee, I understand why that's being said. It's, we didn't have to lay off an employee, and look what we have. But then a lot of people go, wow, you cut that many millions out of the budget and you didn't have to lay off an employee? How inflated was your budget?
Yeah, I think he, and I can't speak for the mayor what's happening with the city, but to me they found the savings operationally. You know, whether it was contracts or whatever it may be, they looked at the operations and said, we can make the cuts here. You know, the process that we follow in Marion City Schools is, you know, we knew when I'm looking at the stats that 81% of our expenditures was paying staff. Now, you always hear the number of 80% is common. statewide in public education, 78%. So, you know, 3% paying staff, we know where our wages are and what the market demand is. We felt like we had a little bit more room there with staff. Operationally, you know, it's become very difficult with some of the staff you have to carry now because of 20, 25 years, even maybe a little bit longer, and I've lived it. I've been in public education for 31 years. The state mandates that come down, the reporting requirements, those things, there's all of these mandates, whether it's, you know, been, you know, it's in the law now that we're required to do it, or the Department of Education, Workforce Development have created things that we have to report to them. Well, a lot of times they're unfunded mandates. So you have to add positions. So our process is to look at, all right, what can we do operationally? Do we have contracted services and things like that we could reduce? I can tell you that was, you know, looking at, you know, all the 66 positions we cut this year, the highest percentage of those 66 positions were contracted services. So we operationally looked at that. We had over 30% of those positions were contracted services. And then we looked to see if there are other areas operationally that we can make cuts without putting us in a compliance issue with the state and so forth. So we made some cuts around some of that. And then ultimately, you have to then look at personnel. You know, how much personnel, and I'm a big believer in, you have to look at your personnel holistically as a district, what positions you have, and how does that compare to the other school districts across the state? And again, I believe that's where that, when you do that comparison, we were a little heavy, and because 81% of our expenses were for personnel.
So what changes will we see?
I thought the Marion Star did a great job, and I'll give them credit for the article. They ran two articles in the last week or so, and I gave them, you know, one of our core values in the district is transparency, and the other is trust. And I could not give them more information about, you know, what we are doing as a school district. So ultimately, what you see in the positions this year that were reduced to 67, as I mentioned, 30%+ of those positions are contracted services. There's three other big categories, significant categories. There's certified staff, there's classified staff, and there's administration. We stayed between the 10 and 12.5% range in terms of equal distribution across there. Now, I tell you that in the beginning, we went through the process. We have a process we go to make the right cuts to ensure we don't impact the classroom and student achievement the most. A lot of times when you go through a reduction process, it doesn't work out that way, meaning you could be heavy and you're making a lot of certified cuts because you see that you know you have more room there than you do administration. When we went through this process and we went back to look at how it was distributed across, it was distributed equally. It worked out very well, which told me we have a very balanced system across those four categories, especially classified, certified, and administrative staff. And one of the things I think information is power. We talked about that earlier. Every few days, I pay attention to kind of what's going on out there in social media world, as good or bad it is for, you know, organizations and so forth. One of the things that I saw posted out there was that it was around 680 positions in the district, right? And that more than half of them were administrative positions. That is not true. So 2 years ago, we started with 55 positions in the district. In the last 2 years, we would have seven reductions of administrative positions, so we'll be down to 48. And two of those seven, I cut cabinet positions as well. So, you know, 680 positions, right around that. It'd be a little bit less after these reductions. 47 administrators. We are very right-sized, and that's not even close to some of the things that comments people make that just they may not know any better.
If I were to walk into the school, what would I notice being different next year?
I don't think, as an outside community member walking in, I don't think you'll notice anything different. I really don't. I think the way we have went through this reduction process, the strategy that we put into it, the time commitment, we started on this months ago, and we've done it in a way that's going to impact. We're hoping that it will impact the schools as least as possible. And the reason I feel that way is we had meetings with principals and leaders that that supervise other people in the schools and so forth to get as much information as possible from different people to say, where do we have room? Where can we make reductions and still be as effective as we are without impacting student achievement? And, you know, a lot of organizations, when they go through this process, they just do it at the top level. They don't have that feedback. They don't have those conversations. And when they don't do that, they make a lot of poor decisions, and then you will see the impact. I don't think we will. Now, again, I'd take 200 more positions if I could. You know, if the state said, hey, we'll give you this budget, or the local taxpayers said, hey, we'll give you this. I think the more supports that we have, the higher probability we can have student achievement. We went from a 2.5-star to 3-star district last year, and we did that with the 66 positions. I think we can sustain that 3 stars this year. Now, it's going to be a little bit challenging because we're going through a tough time here, and it impacts the culture. We make cuts like this, but I truly believe moving forward, we can sustain that even do better, even with some of the reductions we have. Will it be more difficult, a little bit more challenging? Of course it will. Of course it will. But to answer your question, coming in as a community member, walking in the building, I don't think you'll notice any changes.
Would the student notice changes? Would the parent?
Yeah, I think in some cases, yes. So, you know, of the 66 positions, we cut some aides. So aides are, you know, positions that are placed in the classroom to support teachers and kids. So whether it's a student with a disability in that classroom, whether it's, you know, an aide that's just in a class, you know, that's a aide that floats around the building, the principal can place in classrooms as needed, support there. There will be less support there in those classrooms. But at the same time, we have done this in a way where class sizes will not increase. So the last report I saw, we were 16-1 with student-teacher ratio. The state average is, you know, depending on what numbers you're looking at, you'll see one number that's 19-1, K-12. You'll see another number that K-5 is 20-25, 6-8 is 25-30, and it's about the same for high school. We're going to sustain the same class size. So when we have some of the lowest class sizes, you know, in the state, probably, we're probably in that highest quartile of lowest class sizes. Our teachers can be effective. They're great teachers. We have exceptional teachers in this district. The passion that they have, the love for this community is off the charts. So they can manage that ratio, I believe, with that additional support and still be just as effective. Will it be a little bit more challenging for them? Will they need to differentiate instruction a little differently and their instructional strategies change a little bit? Of course they will. But I think that would probably be some parents would notice that change. The other change would be historically the district has had a nurse in every building. We're reducing 3 of those nurses, so we're going to have 5 nurses. So it's going to be 1 full-time at Harding, 1 full-time at Grant, and then we'll have the other 3 nurses will be every other day at those elementary schools. So say 1 day at Harrison, 1 day at GW. But what we've done is we have also we had 10 ESPs last year, like social workers that provide support to students, and they do help teachers out, and they work with families as well, connect families to social services. We cut 5 of those, so we're at 5 still. So what we'll be doing at those elementaries, we'll be rotating 1 day in elementary school has a nurse. They may not the next day, but they'll have that ESP or slash social worker. So that support will still be there. And again, we work closely with principals to decide that. We did keep assistant principals, and I think you know, that was a significant discussion. Well, any research that you look at, if you are a district that you want your principal to be the instructional leader of the building, and we've been working towards that since I've been here for 18 months, and they are becoming instructional leaders. In that model, you need assistant principal. Assistant principal is a utility player. The principal is acting like a instructional leader, supporting the teachers in the classroom, assessing, evaluating, giving them feedback to be better teachers. You need somebody running the office, and that's the utility player I call assistant principal. So if we would yank that assistant principal away, that principal could no longer be an instructional leader. They're spending all their time, you know, in the office area with the operations, and then your achievement would go down. So based on research, what research says, we said, you know what, we have to keep the APs at this point with everything that we've done around making our principals instructional leaders. And I think that's a change historically in the district.
As time goes on, as this article or headline would suggest, you know, a plan to cut 66 staff positions, part of an 81 position reduction over the 2 year, next 2 years. What's next? What would be next?
Well, we're advocating with state reps, whether it's the Senate or, you know, the House. You know, I attend superintendent meetings, and we get some FaceTime with them. We're going to continue to advocate for state funding. You know, obviously, I don't think anybody would argue with lowering property taxes, right? Including myself, right? Mm-hmm. However, what we have to figure out is, and I don't know if everybody understands it, but three-fifths or, you know, say 60% of local property tax funds schools. You know, so if you start putting a cap on how much schools can collect, you know, from at least in Marion City Schools, from local property taxes, which again I think is a good thing, you have to figure out how are you going to fund public schools. Because at the same time, the money that we get from the state is flatlined. The state has not, and if I go back and look at the data, I think they've barely, I don't even know if they've kept up with inflation, you know, over the years. So state funding has become flat, right? Less local property taxes coming in, you know, there could be more financial challenges. Now, with where we're at as a school district, you know, we still have $19 million in reserves. So I don't say that lightly. I think that's important. We are doing this the right way. We're starting now. We're taking corrective action. So that next year, you know, if you would have looked in October, our five-year forecast, we were in $4.3 million deficit spending this year. When you start adding in those budget bills, that goes up to almost six. Well, my goal was to get to $5.5-6 million in reductions this year. I think I'm going to hit that number. So if we hit that number, you know, then next year we're in a position where we're maybe in deficit spending a little bit. But what that does is, instead of running out of money in 28, 29, that extends that well out to 32, probably maybe 33, I'm hoping, and we'll see what that looks like. So I don't foresee, even with some of the changes with the bills, I don't foresee us having to make any more reductions for a while, I'm hoping. Now, I can't predict what the state's going to do. I can't predict what their, you know, funding model is going to be, what bills will make it through. I know they're still talking about this and that. But I think this is putting us in the best position as possible for sustainability, fiscal sustainability moving forward, with still the, you know, the highest probability of academic achievement, improved in academic achievement.
You know, it's very interesting. There's a group in Ohio right now that wants to put a measure on the ballot to completely eliminate property taxes. This has obviously worried the current governor, Mike DeWine, to the point where he said this is a bad idea, and if you do this, we're going to have to raise sales tax to at least 20%. The people who want this, obviously, if you didn't have to pay sale or property tax, wouldn't that be great? That'd be nice. Everybody'd like that. But there must be a belief, and I think it's Governor DeWine's belief, that if you put that on the ballot, if you go to people and say, do you want to pay property tax, everybody's going to say no, and this is going to pass.
Yeah,
and then how do we fund schools which are mainly funded 60%. By property tax? So the question then becomes, the people who are voting for this, I'm sure they don't want to hurt the schools, but they must believe there's another way to do this.
Yeah, I think the two options, and you hit it, the two options that they talked about is income tax and sales tax. I don't think the community knows what that really means. I mean, you're talking about, if DeWine said 20%, I thought that number was somewhere between 15 and 20%. Whether sales tax or income tax, you're well north of 10%. So if you're going to do a statewide sales tax, income tax, everybody's going to suffer from it. And then it just shifts the responsibility in who's suffering, right? It really does. You know, it spreads it across the state, but it spreads it across the state to low socioeconomic communities, higher socioeconomic communities, meaning that now they're all paying the same for their child's education, but we know the more affluent districts and the people there have more money than places like Marion City Schools and in our community. So it's, you know, they're going through this process. And I'll say, you know, at this point, they've just capped property tax. So in other words, districts cannot necessarily count on the future forecast getting as much property tax because it's going to be capped at inflation. So it's still a tremendous hit to public school districts, but even just doing that, you know, it's going to make districts make cuts, and some districts are going to be in a lot worse position than us because I feel like we're okay. But it's still going to be challenging over time. It's going to, over time, unless they take corrective action, and maybe the answer is you keep the cap the way it is with property tax, and then at the same time, you do some type of income by sales tax, but it's it's something that's reasonable. You know, maybe that's the answer. But I truly believe that if you eliminate property tax altogether, which I think nobody would say no to that, you have to have another solution. And another solution of jacking income tax or sales tax, I don't think would be well received either.
You know, it's very interesting here in Marion because we have four other school districts in the county. And for some reason, you became the story. Marion City Schools became the story here and something that is going on statewide and nationally. Why do you think you became the story? Have we just not heard from those other districts yet in Marion County? Is that the story
No,
here?
It's the city schools are getting hit first.
First.
So if you look at the budget bills, look at the theme and trim across the straight, the state, it's all city schools that are heavily state funded. We're heavily state funded. I think the other four county schools, not even close to probably how we're state funded. I don't know what their percentages are, but I know they definitely rely more on property tax. So it's going to be probably challenging for them. Here, the trend I see is statewide is city school districts are suffering now. And then if you really look at the bills and what they do, I think over the next 2, 3, and 4 years, maybe into the 5 years, some of your other districts that are more local property taxes, when those caps start hitting, when property values go up, they're assessed, but they can't take all that money like they used to be, I think they're definitely going to suffer. So, you know, it's more city schools now, and I think, you know, those other districts in the county will probably suffer down the road a little bit more. But I do know a couple of them are in a sound financial position, too, currently, but they know it's going to impact them eventually.
Is there any way this could be stopped or curtailed? Is there a ballot measure? Is there a levy? Is there anything like that that could turn this around? Because it seems to me that a lot of school districts, when they face a problem like this, that's usually, I don't want to call it a threat, but that's how they campaign for their levies. They say, if we don't pass this, these are the losses we're going to see.
Well, certainly, Marion City Schools could have taken that position right now. And as superintendent and communicating with the board, I didn't feel that was the appropriate next step. One, I do think, looking historically in Marion, it's very difficult to pass levies in Marion. I mean, the history tells it. The school district hasn't passed a levy. I can't tell you how long. I late 80s, you know. And it's not fiscally responsible to the taxpayers to know that if you compare Marion City Schools to the other districts that are like us, that we're carrying more staff than others, that we can make some reductions and still provide an exceptional education. So I felt it was our responsibility, and I believe the board feels that, and I can't speak for the board, but holistically, I believe they feel the same way, that, you know, we have a responsibility to our citizens, and we have to make a good faith attempt to do this. We will have an operating levy, a renewal coming up. You know, it's going to be, we won't be on the ballot this November, but, you know, there'll certainly be some discussions that following year. That we would have to go on, you know, a year from November. And that's worth, you know, a little over $2 million a year for operation purposes. So we have to look at that. You got to take a look at some of the changes in the laws as well with the 20 mil floor. If we're at the 20 mil floor or not, how does that impact us? Is it even worth doing another renewal? So the renewal wouldn't be any new in, money for taxpayers to pay. Everything would be exactly the same. But do we have an opportunity then to put a tax on to go higher? Yes. We have not had that discussion. To me, that's a last resort. I wouldn't want to do that. I would want to try to, continue to advocate at the state level, whether it's in the Senate, the House, the reps. I know that there are a lot of conversations and bills being discussed around how do you fund public schools moving forward. You know, they're talking about a flat per pupil rate for all kids across for all school districts. So we really need to see how some of that plays out before we make any decisions moving forward. But that would be one of the last things I'd want to do.
You spoke about it earlier that one of the bits of misinformation that came out during this was that Marion City Schools has a ton of administrative staff and that this is the problem. It always seems to go there that the administration is too big, it's paid too much, and why don't they take a pay cut? Why don't they start chopping? You know, the superintendent's paid too much. You know, look at what he makes compared to what other people make in the community. Yep. What do you say to those accusations or assertions?
I do think it's natural. It doesn't matter what school district you're in. It doesn't matter in the public sector. You know, even some of the private sector can't leak out as much because it's not public record. But even then, we see it get criticized all the time what the administration makes. I think first and foremost, again, after this district, we will have with 600 plus staff, and that's not even including supplementals. When you start throwing in the supplementals and things that we contract out with people or the extra work people do, we have this year is over 900. It'd like next year to be 100 or some total positions. So when you really look at that, and we'll be down to 47 administrative positions. I've cut two cabinet positions. Where you have to be cognizant as a leader is you can only cut administration so deep before you have operational gaps that creates problems everywhere, right? So if we don't have the administrators in position to be able to address some of the issues that come up in transportation with the bus routing, to ensure that it's safe for kids to travel, to ensure we're hiring the best drivers, to ensure we're hiring the best teachers, to provide oversight, ensure that operationally we're operating at a exceptional level and at least an average level, right? If you begin cutting all these administrative positions, there will be problems operationally, whether it's not enough support to address parent concerns, whether it's parent complaints, whether it's class sizes being increased completely because we don't have the people to support those teachers in the classrooms. It creates all these other issues. So what we do is we look at all of our administrative positions and we say, how many of these dispositions do we have? Let's say we have four of them. Do we have the ability to cut one of these positions and not have state compliance issues and not have operational gaps issue? And if we do, we're going to cut it. If we don't, if we don't have operational problems, then we're going to cut it. But if we say, oh my gosh, we're going to have a compliance issue with state, we're not going to be able to get this data on time at the state, we're going to have problems over here because not having this person, we can't absorb that anywhere else, they're already doing a job and a half, then those just aren't options. So having 47, positions that are administrative positions out of 600 and plus is we're right-sized, and we are pushing the boundaries of leadership. And I can tell you, if you cut too deep, the leaders you do have left are so overwhelmed with the work that they have and so stressed out, they will leave in droves. And then you have a revolving door and it creates a bigger problem.
Well, and I think that's the next question. What was it like to go to these cabinet positions? What was it like to go to these people who may have been there a long time or may have had a job that they were depending on that was going to pay the bills for them and their family for the next few years and say, we've got to let you go?
The cabinet positions, we had a person, one of our cabinet people a year ago left to go to another school district. So we just reduced it through attrition. And this year, one of our cabinet level members is retiring. And again, we were able to do it through attrition. Now, the hard conversation there is like, you look at those two major areas of responsibilities, where can you absorb that into five cabinet people that are left? Mm-hmm. two positions, out of seven, that's significant. You're talking 15, 20%. And so the planning and the coordination to go with that to determine where that could live, even more responsibility on the superintendent and so forth. Those were tough conversations. And they're always tough because, again, I have to be cognizant that those responsibilities were shifting to my top two people in the district underneath me. Can they handle that workload? Is it going to be too much for them? Do I risk losing them and bringing somebody in that don't have even close to the experience that they have? But we have tremendous leaders. And I think, you know, in our cabinet, we have very solid leadership, and they have the skills and abilities to handle that extra work. That's not the case everywhere. You would have some school districts that did not cut those other cabinet positions because they didn't necessarily have people in their cabinet that had the skills and abilities to do that extra workload. And that would have been an extra, you know, extra dollars on the district. But because we have a solid leadership team, we were able to do that.
You know, one of the reasons we're doing this interview is when this came out in the newspaper, there was a more negative response than positive in the comment sections on social media and amongst the community. We do live in a world, it's sad to say now, where perception is reality. It may not be the reality of what's going on at all, but clearly if you would read those comments and you would read what's going on and what people are talking about in the restaurants and the grocery stores, so on and so forth, they would believe Marion City Schools has a very big problem to the point where they're putting out negative information on how big the administration is. Why is that?
You know, I think the world of social media is so challenging. It's open to anyone. Anyone can, within 30 seconds, could go in there and make a comment. And it could be on something that they heard in a grocery store. It could be on something that one person told them. What I find is when I do go on social media and pay attention to some of that. I think, again, information is power. And I have to be cognizant of what's happening out there in the community as well. And that's my role. It's my responsibility to do that. But what I found over the years doing that is that, And even in this situation, you know, a lot of the information that's on social media about these things are just not always the correct information. It may be a piece of the story, right? But it's not the whole story, right? So, you know, I read something on there that, you know, we were renting out a building and we're only charging $1 a month and we pay all the utilities, and if we would be charging that program, you know, what we should, maybe we wouldn't have a budget deficit and we'd be making money. Well, that's a piece of it. What they don't know is we created a new program in partnership with another partner because we were spending well over $1 million a year with this other organization out there in the market, and there was no competition. And when I saw the amount of money that we were spending, I said, we can create our own program. So what people don't realize is that program that's in that building that's being charged $1 a month and not paying utilities, those costs were absorbed in the savings, and we're actually saving on paper, when you put it all together, between $800,000 and $1 million a year. That's the background information that people just don't know. So Facebook typically is social, like Facebook or Instagram, it's typically surface level. A lot of people hear something, they put it on there, and it creates good dialogue and discussion. But a lot of times, I'm not going to say all the time, because sometimes there's factual information on it's great. But sometimes, majority of the time, at least I see when it's connected to school districts and kind of what's happening, it's the surface level conversation. There's usually always more to the story that can justify the decisions. Now, I can't say that for all organizations or, well, if it's public sector or private sector, I'm sure there's some things put on there that's true where, you know, bad decisions were made in organizations and school districts and others. I just say in our particular case, we are very thorough what we do. And in this particular case, with the reductions and so forth, there's a lot of surface level conversations out there, and there's a lot more information to the story.
Were you surprised at the reaction to this?
No, not at all. And the reason I'm not is we're talking about kids. You know, we have 4,000 kids in our school district. People in the community aren't inside, knowing kind of the number of staff members and all the logistical things happening with operations. So when you put impacting kids and you're talking about reducing staff that support kids, it's never going to be a good outcome on the surface level. So people get emotional and their first response is typically going to be, oh, this isn't good. But then at the same time, you also have the crowd that are your taxpayers that want the districts to be fiscally responsible, and they'll say, well, this is a good thing that they're doing, but they should have done it 15 years ago. Yeah. You know, so then you get beat up a little bit because you didn't do it sooner. But again, to those people, I think it's important to know we have $19 million in reserves at the end of this year. We are doing this the right way. We're not at $1 million left, you know, in reserves at the end of this year. If it was up to me, if I was here before 18 months ago, we would have been taking corrective action even before that, so we wouldn't even have to cut 66 positions today. And I knew it a year ago, but I didn't want to impact the culture too much, so I just kept it through attrition with 15 positions. But as soon as these budget bills came through, I didn't have a choice anymore. We had to take significant action.
What do you think the perception is in the community of the Marion City Schools today?
Well, I would say this. You know, we do surveys with our staff, and we have great relationships throughout the district with our staff. I feel that way. I think our board feels that way, our cabinet. Of course, when you go through something like this, it impacts the culture negatively. You know, the goal, though, going into this was the further ahead that we could plan for this and the more conversations we could have and the feedback that we get internally with our people, the better decisions we're going to make and the better they're going to feel about it. I'll give you an example. Just Friday, we started doing donuts and coffee with the superintendent and cabinet on Friday. So the board's welcome. Sometimes the board comes out. I go and have donuts and coffee, just talk with staff, answer their questions and so forth. And I was at a school on Friday, and I sensed the room just wasn't, the climate wasn't as positive as what I would want it. Historically, every school we've been to, the climate has been great, even through all these reductions. They're upbeat, they're positive. So overall, we've sustained that culture really well internally. And in that example Friday, I just sat down for 30 to 45 minutes and just had a coffee, sat down and talked, answered all the questions. And again, we talked about, they ask a lot of questions about some of the things that were on social media that I had to fill in the blanks on. Well, let's talk about that, what that means. So they felt a lot better, I think, after we were done with that, and it put them in a much better place for sure. So internally doing well. Now, to answer your question, in the community, you know, I think that we have a lot of support in the community. I mean, we had a heck of a year last year. We went from a 2.5-star to a 3-star district. Our leadership team didn't start, you know, till September 2024. My goal was just to sustain, and we increased. So we're doing very well. Now, I wish that word was out there a little bit more. We tried to push it out there, and people are aware of it. You know, so I think from a community perspective, I think the people that are really engaged in the schools and see what's going on, I get a lot of positive feedback all the time, whether it's emails, whether it's social media, that type of thing. But when you're cutting positions, you know, the community, you're going to get some of the community that just aren't happy about that, and you're going to get some criticism from it. Our goal is just to try to compress that as much as possible and just, you know, here's all the positive things happening. This is a little bit of a setback, but we're still moving on. We have a lot of momentum going on in the district, and we're going to continue to improve and get better every day.
Are you surprised that even staff members in the district are impacted by the social media response? That's the perception is reality, I guess, narrative.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. They pay attention to that stuff, too. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of our staff would prefer going on there and comment to correct the record on some of the stuff with when they know that it's false information. But they know that their role as a teacher or an employee of the district, that's a very delicate balance to do. So you got to be cautious with that. So, no, I'm not surprised by that. You know, some of the stuff they know is not true. Some of the stuff they say, oh, I didn't hear that, you know, and that's where it's our job to stay up on some of that information to correct a record when we get a chance to. And the only thing I do want to say, too, and I think this is important, and I've communicated this out to our staff across the district and keeping them updated on where we are in the reduction process. I think that means a lot as well. In other words, you don't keep them in a closet while you're going through all this. You update them. Hey, in the next month, this is what we're going to be doing. Here's another audit. This is where we're at, what we're doing. To date, of the 81 positions that we've had, because we've been so strategic, only we're down to 33 positions that are actually somebody right now that would lose their job. 47 positions or whatever it would be, we've done it through attrition. So we're not having a lot of people losing their jobs. We're in March still. I would suspect by the time that we get to June, that 33 number is going to be down in the teens. So the lower we can get that number, the more people that keep jobs in our community, and the less impactful it is. And I'm hopeful that number gets down to zero, and it could. It could, and it's all about resignations, retirements, and how many of those come in.
With a minute left, what would be your message to the community in regard to this situation?
As a school district, we're required to take corrective action and be fiscally responsible to our taxpayers. We have almost, when you add on the budget bills, almost a $6 million deficit projected for this year, 2026. 2027, it just continues to increase. So based on, the budget bills coming in, we have to take corrective action. And even though we are taking corrective action, I feel very comfortable that we are still going to provide an exceptional education and support to the community. We have a lot of momentum going, and we're going to keep that momentum going as well. And I'll just give you two examples that's important that we're doing at no cost to the district. We're in works right now with a partnership with Center Street Community Health Center. And we've been working on getting a grant with the state to put a health center, a comprehensive health center, in one of our schools. So you literally walk in, and it's like a doctor's office. And we feel that we have a really good chance. I've done this six times in Toledo, six times I opened these up, worked with the state. I feel like we have a good probability of getting this done. So you want to talk about the research now that has things that have an impact on a community like Marion, put in a school embedded health center and see what happens. Attendance goes up, academics improve, behavior improves as well. And on the cost saving side for a community and for health insurance, research shows it's less emergency room visits when you're providing services to not just kids, but we'll open it up to families as well. So we have that happening in partnership. Then with the United Way, the Boys and Girls Club, we're opening up some new programs. We're trying to get two success coaches in at the high school. We also are working on opening a community hub at the same school. We're going to have a health center. A community hub is ultimately a director that's working there that's connecting families and students to resources into the community to provide support. So we're going through all these reductions, but at the same time, we're increasing our supports for students and families at zero cost to the district.
Do we know what school this would likely happen at?
It's going to be a grant.
Be grant. Mm-hmm. There you go. All right. Well, we thank Marion City School Superintendent Brian Murphy for being on today. Again, the story was Marion City Schools plan to cut 66 staff positions, part of an 81 position reduction over a two-year period to address a spending deficit. Well, it was interesting to get caught up on all this because I think, knowledge is power. That's what we need. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Well, what about me? What about my needs?
To the original Doctor of Love, Dr. Ruth Westheimer.